Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. This coming Friday, January 20th, the country will celebrate the inauguration of Donald J. Trump as our 45th president. In light of the surprising November election, on today's program we'll hear a panel discussion on the topic, the GOP, a party in transition. The members of the panel will be John Tucker, the chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party, Dan Welch, former Omaha City Councilman and chairman of the Nebraska Republican Party, Amy Melton, Omaha City Councilwoman, and Tom Becca, opinion editor for KPTM Channel 42. The moderator will be Rick Galusha, associate professor in the College of Arts and Sciences at Bellevue University. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, November 23, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Bellevue University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Rick Galusha.
So I thought I would start off with just kind of when we originally put together the panel, the expectation of the outcome of the election results differed somewhat. And so I thought I would start with anybody wanted to take the opportunity to claim that they saw that coming.
Well, I'll jump in. We are fortunate to be on this side of the state where we can jump across the river and see what happens in Iowa. And I jumped over there during, actually, a year and a half ago, and Amy, you were there too. We went to the Pottawatomie County Lincoln Day dinner where their guest speaker was Donald Trump. And he actually hadn't announced for sure at that point, but he was really talking a lot about running. He had some pretty good support in that room just in that one day itself. Fast forward to January this year when the caucus jumped into Iowa for the start of the true campaign season. I went over there to help out. I was actually at the one polling place or caucus site with Jeff Jorgensen, who's the county chair in Pottawatomie County, the Republican chairman there, and was helping him out with the caucus. We're allowed to go there and watch, and we can actually speak on behalf of candidates, who I was there to speak on behalf of Rand Paul. And I saw a number of people walk in the door and get in line, a huge line at this caucus site, and come to find out that this is happening all over caucuses in Iowa. I saw people trying to change their registrations or newly register. You can do the same-day registration in Iowa on election days. I saw Democrats switching to be Republicans. I saw independents switching to be Republicans. I saw people who had never voted before walk in the door and try and vote. And that caucus didn't start for about 40 minutes late. I saw people walk out there frustrated. They didn't like the system. The system's bad. And they felt cheated, robbed, because they didn't have the time to stick around and participate in politics, and they walked out. And that kind of in the back of my mind got me thinking, is there something going on here? I always felt that Trump only had maybe 20% support in the Republican Party, and that was it. But that obviously changed over time as more and more people showed up. We went to a few of his rallies and saw people that aren't normal Republicans or people who would probably jump into politics attending these rallies. And I think at that point, there really was something there that possibly most of us weren't watching.
I had it reversed. I had Trump winning the popular vote and Hillary winning the Electoral College just because of the way that things, were set up. So I had it reversed. I didn't see this coming. I interviewed Donald Trump before that dinner that day and before he even announced. And he told me he was serious about running and everything. And I was impressed with the guy when we first met. I was very impressed. And a little insight into Donald Trump. I was also had a chance to interview him on his plane right before the caucus. He came and did a big rally. And as I walked onto the plane, I got one of those looks, like, I know you from somewhere, And I go, hello, I'm Tom Becca. I interviewed you when you were here last time. And he says, oh, yes, you were very good to me. It wasn't, oh, good to see you again. Oh, that's where I know you from. Nothing like that. It was like, oh, yes, you were very good to me. So I got a little insight into his personality there, which sort of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit in that regard. And it became more and more evident during the campaign that he was that guy. I also, as we were leaving, I asked him, I said, what is different now between when you thought it would be like running for president and actually running for president? And his answer was, I never thought I'd be this far ahead this early. So the whole thing, whether or not he was really serious about running, and there's been that speculation, he did win. It turns out, I think, though, anybody that thinks that this was a big Republican victory is kidding themselves. It was a Donald Trump victory. This was not a Republican victory. This was a Donald Trump victory. And if you think that all of a sudden that Michigan's going to be a red state, you're kidding yourself. This was all about Donald Trump and the fact that he was running against a person that's not very likable. You know, and I'm, forget about the emails and the scandals and all that stuff, and people won't vote for that. Take a look at what happened. Take a look at what happened with the election 4 years earlier. Yep. Barack Obama won the popular vote like 53-47%. But in exit polling, they asked people which of these candidates is most like you, and he won that 60-40. People that voted for Mitt Romney still like Barack Obama more. So I think anything right now, as we talk about the future of the party, whether it be Republicans or Democrats, is not going to be the party as much as the personalities.
You know, I would say that the Republicans did win the election because Hillary Clinton didn't win the election. That was what was first and foremost, I think, in the minds of many Republicans that didn't embrace Trump. They really didn't want Hillary to win. And in that respect, the Republican Party certainly won on election night. The other thing I would say is in terms of being able to predict who was going to win this race, most of the polls that we saw on a daily basis, even down towards the end when Trump was inching closer, would have indicated that Hillary Clinton was going to win the Electoral College. However, what was despite where those polls were going up and down, throughout the campaign, there was one poll that was very telling, and that was whether people thought America was on the right track or on the wrong track. And overwhelmingly, people thought America was on the wrong track. And so when you look at who was the candidate for change here, it wasn't Hillary Clinton. And if people wanted to go away from the status quo and where we were at, and they spoke, and they did, you know, they were going to go with Donald Trump. So if you combine that with all the energy that he was producing in terms of being able to get out the vote and get out these people who felt disaffected, who were angry with where we were at, you know, that was an indicator that he would have won. Now, did I predict it? You know, at the end of the day, I thought it was going to be close. I would have said maybe Hillary would have edged him out. But there were indicators that Donald Trump was going to win this race.
But you're sort of proving my point, though, because, yeah, people want to change. But ask those people what specifically the changes they were looking for from Donald Trump. It was build the wall. Well, he's backpedaled on that. Lock Hillary up. He's backpedaled on that. It was all about the personality. It was about the emotion. And nobody really knew what his programs were other than a few great slogans. He was going to make America great again without anybody really defining what great meant.
Well, but I actually think it was more than that. I think the build the wall people and lock Hillary up, those were just the voices you heard because they spoke louder. But the vast majority of the people who voted for Donald Trump, I believe, voted for Donald Trump because they were fearful of losing the Supreme Court, losing what our country was built upon, our democracy, the Constitution. So although I think there were a lot of just Trump supporters, he won because there were also a lot of people that said, I may not necessarily like Donald Trump. I don't like some of the things he said and even some of the building the wall. But they wanted to make sure they saved our country, too. It wasn't just making America great again. It was making sure we didn't lose America. And I think that's where when people walked into that to the voting booth, people who said, you know, I don't really like either candidate, but they ended up voting for Donald Trump, and I think that that's why. But I agree. When you looked at Iowa, and I went over and caucused in Iowa as well, which maybe people don't know you can do. It was a great experience. But the people over there, they truly wanted change, and they did not want Hillary Clinton, and they were very excited about Donald Trump. It wasn't just, you know, I like him or I don't like Hillary, but excited. And so there was a movement there. I also think that pollsters, I think polling just is not accurate anymore in today's day and age of cell phones and everything else. I just don't know that we can count on those polls.
So one of the questions I have is John kind of brought it up, which is the Republican agenda. And when we look at America, a guy named Skronik says there's been five presidential agendas: Jefferson, Jackson, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and Reagan. Trump's agenda, from what we can discern from his campaign rhetoric, differs from Reagan's agenda in some areas pretty significantly. So what do you guys think? Is it an endorsement of the Republican agenda, or is he bringing in a whole new body of issues into the agenda?
Well, I think he's bringing in new issues, that's for sure, into this party. It's He's also a master persuader, so it could be that he's just going to try and lead, and then it's going to be up to us to tell him which way we go. Now, I would say that I think that his introduction or addition of the American worker is probably something that this party hasn't been attributed to in a long time. And I think maybe perhaps Reagan, you know, had that, you know, rising tide lift all boats kind of statement, and perhaps that's where Trump can bring out more of that. There is this, in some ways, I think it's refreshing to actually finally have the American worker involved in politics again. I think it's been for the Democrats, especially the last 8 years, maybe longer, you know, they've had two major issues, and, you know, whether it be homosexual, transgenderism, does that identity politic kind of thing, and global warming. That was it. Those two issues are it for the Democrats. If you don't want to buy into all of that, then you're not a Democrat. And I think that really hurt the Democrat Party is that they have lost the American worker. They have lost that support. And I think where Trump's coming back and saying, hey, look, the common man is out there. Those men and women that are working every day, someone needs to support them. And you talk about the trade policy, the immigration policy, all of those are designed to help those people. And I think those people showed up. And now it's up to us now as Republicans, do we accept them in and do we grow that? Do we help grow policies and help Trump out to make sure that that gets done?
Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are being honest about the economy. Because the reality is, it's not Japan, it's not China, it's not Mexico, it's not Wall Street that's a problem. It's your cell phone. When was the last time anybody bought a map? When was the last time anybody bought a CD, a VHS tape, any of these things? These were all jobs that were out there. Not only the jobs, I'll use the example of buying an album, all right? Back in my day, I bought an album. And I went to a record store where there was a clerk selling me that album. And that album employed the person not only that recorded the album, the person that made the vinyl, the person that made the cardboard for the cover, the person that did the cover art, the people that made the cellophane that wrapped the album, the people that made the cardboard boxes that shipped the album, the truck drivers and the warehouses, okay? Well, now those warehouses are being run by robots. Nobody is shipping those boxes anymore. The record stores have all closed down. You click a button and there's your song. I met a person in Council Bluffs a few years ago who was a courier. Guy, great guy, salt of the earth, American kind of a guy. Blue-collar worker. He probably had a high school education, if that. He was a courier. In the 80s, he was making $40,000 to $50,000 a year in the 80s taking documents. You're lawyers. Taking documents from one law firm to the next. In the media, they would take a recorded commercial from one radio station to the next station. He was making money as a courier. If you got a document now, you got to send another lawyer, you push a button. That courier job ain't coming back, no matter who got elected. And I think that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party were disingenuous in the way they talked to the workers, because the economy has changed so drastically much, and they led them to believe that, oh, we're bringing steel back to America. I don't think that's going to happen.
The argument recently that the jobs being lost, and I think this is the argument you're making, Tom, were lost to microchips, not Mexico. Mm-hmm. And to some degree that's true. Trump had made the mention to coal miners that he would bring back, quote-unquote, millions of jobs. Currently, according to Pew, there's about 52,000 people that work in the coal mining industry, so that's a pretty significant change. So let me ask this, though, is the rhetoric that Trump used throughout his campaign is different from what it appears the policies and the pursuits he's going to make. I'm personally having trouble reconciling that. How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I think some of the promises that Donald Trump made are unrealistic. I think we all understand that. But that's kind of the speech that Donald Trump, he uses words huge and he says millions. And I think we all know that can't actually be attained. It's not realistic. However, I also think that the majority of the people don't necessarily expect him to fulfill those promises, and we recognize that. I do believe, though, we will consider Donald Trump a successful president if he does bring the jobs back, if he reduces our $19 trillion deficit. So if he creates the jobs, brings them back to America, if we have some immigration reform and we have more enforcement, we're working with ICE and cities are working with ICE to enforce the illegal immigration policies and deport those that really should be deported. I think people will be happy. So, you know, again, I know we said he's already backpedaled on potentially the wall and Hillary. Well, you know what, though? We need to focus on the things that are truly important. It's making those right appointments. It's appointing the right Supreme Court justice to fill Scalia's spot. But that's going to get America back on track. And I think that's what the majority of people are looking for.
It happens at every level. And I think that people know that a lot of what they're doing is just trying to win an election. But what, you know, what Donald Trump did was he struck a chord with people. The genius, if there was any, to his campaign was realizing where he needed to go to win, and that was with these working class people that felt like they didn't have a voice. And by doing that, he was able to win the upper Midwest and win states that the Democrats have traditionally won in order to beat the Republican candidate. And so that in and of itself was I think, somewhat remarkable. Will he bring all those jobs back? No, but I think that the economy will improve. And if the economy improves from what we've been doing over the last 8 years with stagnant growth, then I think that America is going to be pleased with the job he's doing, even if he can't bring all of those jobs back. If he can get rid of Obamacare and replace it with something better, I believe Americans felt like Obamacare was kind of forced on them some years ago, and I think almost every contemporaneous poll would have told you that. And they were right. America was right. Didn't work. Not working very well. And so Donald Trump does that. You know, if he maybe he doesn't build the perfect wall like he talked about, but if he starts to turn the corner with regard to stopping the inflow of illegal immigrants, if he can get rid of some of the illegal immigrants that are creating crime in America, and I'm not talking about necessarily the God-fearing illegal immigrants that are trying to contribute, but there's a lot of them that are not, and they're counterproductive. If he can start doing some of those types of things, even if he doesn't, hit a grand slam, I think America's going to be happy with the job that he's done.
I'm going to disagree with you, and I'll tell you why. Because I think that his promise was too vague. Take a look at Barack Obama, promised hope and change. The African-American community was waiting for all this hope and change. And guess what? What everybody's definition of hope and change is different. So when they didn't get what they were thinking they were going to get, they went away. They didn't show up. And I think the problem is make America great again. Well, everybody in this room has a different idea of what that means. And that's going to be the task. Look, I honestly believe, and you and I were talking about this before, Donald Trump will either be one of the best presidents we've ever had or one of the worst. There will be no in between.
And the original question was about the Republican agenda, and what you're talking about, Tom, is the whole American agenda. But getting back to just Republican agenda and kind of what Dan was saying, I talked to people who, Republicans, who say just do three things. You know, don't attack the Second Amendment. You know, preserve our military and make sure that we are a force around the world still. We can actually fight ISIS, but don't make it worse in the Middle East. And thirdly, don't get us too far in debt. You know, we understand the debt issue, but don't make it worse. And if he can do those three things, I think the Republican agenda is still intact. That was your mm-hmm. question.
Yeah.
And then perhaps the Republican base can still be with him, regardless of whatever happens after that. If he doesn't build the wall, or if he doesn't go after Hillary, or maybe does other things within other special identity politic type of things to go attract Democrats, I think the Republican agenda still holds.
But John, haven't nonpartisan studies of Donald Trump's economic policy shown it'll actually put us more in debt?
Let's wait and see what happens with that. Because how do you know that that's really going to happen? How does any of these models actually work out? You know, does the model always work in the way it says it does? Not always. You know, economics is that dismal science. Who knows where it's going to go?
Well, let me ask this question. I think the message on Tuesday night was that there's a clear desire for a change in direction. And people came out that maybe hadn't voted in quite a while to make that message. But when you look at the way that government works, there's kind of three challenges in the next 12 months that a Trump administration is going to face. And so my question is this, and I'll give you the challenges, is will the people be patient as he goes through the mechanization of government? For example, I believe that there's a discussion about raising the debt level in 2017, which the Republicans now control the House and the Senate. So that's going to put them in a precarious situation with some of the voters. you have executive actions which, as I understand it, once they hit the rule, once they become enacted and have passed through the rulemaking phase, there's a requirement of a 12-month window for public comments. And the third thing, if I can remember it here, is that the budget for 2017 is already in place. So there's a lot of momentum that's going to carry forward from the Obama administration into the first year of Mr. Trump's administration. Will these people that voted for change be willing to wait the 12 to 18 months that that might require?
I think the people will be, but the media won't. We've already heard, well,
we're media, from.
We're already hearing from, the media. He hasn't done it. He's already
failed.
The same?
Are all politicians the same? Why do you broad brush the media? Why is that acceptable, the media? We're on public radio right now, okay? That's different than KFAB, which is different than the World Herald, which is different than the TV stations. But you throw it one big broad brush. So all politicians are crooks because one politician is a crook.
I think Amy's point is valid in that the media will seize the opportunity to create headlines, fairly or not, that is going to sell advertising. And they, as we saw in the campaign, they gave Mr. Trump a great deal of free publicity in his preliminary or the primaries, but then they kind of went in the general election, oh, my God, this guy's going to win, and it shifted. And you could see the shift in the media. So the media does have an effect, but the question I want to kind of, and maybe ask Dan a little bit, is do you think the voter will have the patience, the person looking for that change, over the next 12 to 18 months? How's that going to manifest?
You know, I think Tom would disagree, but I think Donald Trump has a mandate with this win. I think it was widespread, and I think that people believe in him. And I think more so in the last month than they did throughout the entire campaign. And I think that his transition is going fairly well. Again, some of the mainstream media would tell you otherwise, but I think it's going fairly well. And I believe that the American people are going to be fair with him. I think that they're going to watch, and if they see progress, they're going to be patient. If they watch and they see floundering, I don't think it's going to work out for them very well. They're going to say, okay, bad experiment, didn't work. Let's wait a couple more years and get rid of him. Mm-hmm. But I do think if he shows progress. And the other thing is that's really important is the public persona that he presents,
right?
You know, and reaching out to the media, doing everything he can, because I think in large part some of the mainstream media will be against him, but doing everything he can to kind of defeat that and maybe an olive branch to them from time to time so he gets some better coverage. And you know, with this 24/7 media cycle or news cycle, it's just, it's tough. If everybody's against you, and that's what the people are watching, then I think he is going to struggle. But if he shows progress and he continues to kind of on the path of where he's going right now, which I think is more of a conciliatory path than he was on during his campaign, I think that people will be patient with him.
I don't think they'll say this, but would the media be allowed or allow him to say that, well, this is Obama's fault? Obama did the whole, hey, this is George Bush's fault. I inherited this from George Bush. Yeah, this is Bush's fault. Yeah,
that's the reason why things aren't working so much. Now, I don't believe Trump is that kind of guy to say that kind of thing, but would the media give him a pass and say, well, you know, you did inherit something bad, and yeah, sure, whatever.
I don't recall the media giving Barack Obama a pass, because you talked about this in that, my God, okay, Rush Limbaugh, did Rush Limbaugh give him a pass? Rush Limbaugh.
Tom, I know you're getting up there in age, but come on, go back to 8 years, and Obama said, look, I've inherited this mess, and this is all George Bush's fault. He couldn't take go out there and do something.
Yes.
He had to blame Bush.
You're right, and I read articles that were in conservative publications that criticized him for that. I heard talk radio that criticized him for that. That's all the media. You paint this with a broad brush, which is baloney. It's not accurate. Okay, it's like we'll just make the media the whipping boy. And you guys, I'm the only person on this panel that's not a registered Republican, okay? You're looking at this from a Republican standpoint. And the reality is, most people are registering as independents. And Trump didn't win by saying, let's make the Republican Party great again. He said, let's make America great again. And this is where I think both parties are missing the point, because the Democrats had the same thing with Bernie Sanders. Okay, the same sort of populist support on Bernie Sanders' side that the Republicans had with Donald Trump. And so there is a real mood in America right now. And if you're looking at this in the old paradigm of the two-party system, I think that you're missing the point.
So with that being said, do you think that Trump will grow the Republican Party?
I don't think Trump cares.
That's not the question. Will Trump grow the Republican Party if he's bringing in more people?
I look at myself as an American. You know, I don't look at myself as a Republican or a Democrat.
We're talking about the future of the GOP. Will the Republican Party grow with Donald Trump?
I'm not sure either party has a future. I think more and more with the cell phones and social media, I don't think either party has much of a future, because it used to be, and I'll shut up in a second here, Amy. It used to be that you had the party for networking, you had the party for support. Well, okay, Donald Trump basically showed he didn't need the Republican Party to win.
McCain-Feingold did that.
You know, Donald
took
Trump
out the party.
Donald Trump didn't need the party to win.
Well, I disagree with that, and I think our county chair and our state chair that are sitting here would say they didn't sit back in this election and do nothing. What our chairs did helped get Donald Trump over the hurdle. It is thanks to people like Dan Welch and John Tucker and the other county and state Republican leaders that stayed with Donald Trump and stayed supporting him even when it became difficult, when we had videos come out and there were, you know, even some elected Republicans who waffled and were calling for him to step down. You know, our state party, at least here in Nebraska, what I witnessed, but I think witnessed all over the country, they stayed supporting Donald Trump, and they kept people on the message. This isn't about the person. This is about the safety and security of our nation, which I think is the reason you found so many women who voted for Donald Trump. Because, you know what? The issues that women look at, women's number one issues aren't women's health and necessarily and pro-life and all the women's issues that we think of. It's when you ask the majority of the women, what's your number one concern? It's safety. It's what's going on with ISIS. It's what's hitting, we see it hitting our nation. That's women's number one concern. And so I think that's where you're going to have, if Donald Trump makes us feel safer, you know, make America safe again was one of the slogans at the convention. I think that's where people are going to continue to support him. And we heard even up into this election, there were still people blaming Bush for things, even though we've had Obama in for the last 8 years, you've still heard it was Bush's fault coming out of Hillary Clinton's mouth.
Well, let me kind of pivot on that a little bit.
I was going to add something, and then this is just a little bit of insight that most people wouldn't have. But by virtue of the fact that I'm the state chairman of the Republican Party, I'm automatically a member of the Republican National Committee, and so I go to their meetings, and I have contact with them, of course, sending correspondence on a regular basis. And when you say that Donald Trump didn't need the Republicans to win this race, one of the reasons I think that's wrong is because in the last 8 years, Reince Priebus, who's the former, I guess, current chair of the Republican Party, spent millions and millions and millions of dollars building infrastructure in the swing states. He watched what the Obama people did 8 years ago, and he took that lesson to heart, and he raised more money. I think he doubled the money that the Democratic National Committee was able to raise, and he put this infrastructure in place and this organization in place that allowed the candidate to be successful. And I don't think when he was doing it, he knew how important it would be for this particular candidate. Donald Trump was a great candidate in terms of being on the stump and striking a chord with people, but he wasn't the greatest candidate when it came to organization, particularly in swing states, and infrastructure, being able to get out the vote. The Republican National Committee was all in for Donald Trump the second that he won the primary. And so, yeah, I mean, with regard to some of his philosophies, is he do we know where he's going to be in terms of a member of the Republican Party? Not really, but whether he needed the Republican Party to win, absolutely he needed the Republican Party to win.
I think both the Republicans and the Democrats will be used as far as basically an InfoUSA source for information for the candidates to run. They'll give them the databases. They'll give them the information for the candidates to help run.
Well, I think one of the things you want to look at is there is a transition in American society to, particularly in the middle class, to not join groups. So you're right that currently you've got about 23% of the electorate is Republican, 28% is Democrat, and the rest is independent. But it's a fallacy to assume that the independents are in the middle. They're spread evenly. So you have people that are to the right of the Republican Party that are independents because they believe that the Republican Party is insufficiently conservative. And so the kind of the dilemma I think that the party faces is how do you muster that support? For example, independents that are right-leaning are stronger Republican voters than moderate registered Republicans. So you have this influence, and I think we saw it in the Trump election, where people moved fluidly across the political spectrum. They're not hindered by a straight party ticket sort of vote. So there is a challenge, though, as a GOP. I mean, have you guys at the state or the county level recognized that, and is there a plan to try to address that? And is Trump going to bring those people in that he brought in solidly?
Well,
are they going to stick around?
Of course, as the state chairman, we welcome all comers. I mean, the more the merrier, right? And so we're always trying to reach out to all Republicans in the state of Nebraska and bring them in to the fold. With regard to a national candidate, it's kind of interesting how a national candidate can kind of pull people in. I mean, when Trump first, won the primary, Republican primary, there were a lot of Republicans that said that they would never vote for him. But at the end of the day, they weighed out the decision, and that was, we're going to either have Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump as our president. And because I'm a Republican, regardless of how conservative I might be, I know I've got a better shot at a conservative leader with Donald Trump than I do with Hillary Clinton. So I kind of think that that's how that goes on the national level, and that Donald Trump was able to win them over, even if it was by default.
But when you talk about the family values, I think our party's bigger than just one person. And so, no, I do think that with Donald Trump, we have more of a chance of keeping our conservative principles intact and in play than we would had Hillary Clinton been elected. And what I appreciate is I think our party has, we have had a bigger umbrella. We have welcomed more people in over the last 4 years, and I think there has been actually less internal strife, at least in our local politics, over the last 4 years. I know with John Tucker as our chair, when we started out, you know, we kind of had a riff in our own party between some of the Rand Paul, Ron Paul supporters and the more kind of traditionally conservative Republicans. But you know what? We were able to overcome that. Why? Because we look at the goals that we have, the main goals that we have as conservatives, and they're much bigger than any one person. And I also think we're also very forgiving. If you are leading in the right direction, even if it may not be by example, but if you're taking the country along with our policies and doing the right thing, then you are going to garner our support.
You say the Republican Party brings in more people. Who did Donald Trump bring in? Did he bring in Muslims? No. Did he bring in African Americans? No.
Actually, he brought in the transition between the vote for Romney along racial lines and the vote for Trump. There was a significant difference where people that historically had not voted Republican moved over to make that vote. One of the things, though, is there's a significant gender gap between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party of about 24 points. So women tended to go for Mrs. Clinton by 12 points more than Republican women went for Donald Trump. And vice versa, men went for Trump by 12 points greater than they went for Mrs. Clinton. So you kind of have this fractured electorate. And so when we look at it, because one of the things that we kind of agreed that we're going to approach is you're looking at a sharply divided, almost evenly divided electorate. And because it's so close in terms of raw numbers of voters, there's a lot of acrimony there that we haven't seen. I think this is one of the meanest elections I've ever witnessed. And it made me feel very uncomfortable. I think it made a lot of people feel uncomfortable about how mean it is. But when we look at the nature of American government, we need a healthy two-party system to have these necessary debates. Are we heading in the right direction in that regard? Are we creating dialogues with people who see the world differently than we do that are productive rather than destructive?
I don't think we are having that dialogue. I think that everything that is talked about now is about racism, and that the Democrats are trying to win back their base by calling us Republicans racist. And that's a Saul Alinsky, that's Huron statement. Those are tactics that have been used against many people over the last 40, 50 years in this country, and they've resurrected that again, and that's what they're using right now. So if you are a person who wants to talk about individual liberties and freedoms, all of a sudden you're associated with being a racist. That's to me where the dialogue isn't going to happen because the left wants to divide us, and they want to basically take back their base, which they lost. And I don't think they're coming back. I think that the Democrats are probably in a more serious situation than the Republican Party is, actually. Trump will disprove a lot of the problems that people see about being racist and anti-religion and whatever kind of things that you want to talk about, immigration and whatever. I think he's going to prove people wrong. It's just a matter of who owns that message and how does it get out.
Well, let me kind of challenge you a little bit on that. We had talked earlier, you and I, John, about this alt-right movement. And you had kind of had an interesting way that you had defined the subset of racism within that. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Well, as a libertarian-ish kind of Ron Paul, Rand Paul kind of guy, I discovered Ron Paul while reading Conscience of a Conservative, Barry Goldwater's book from 1964. I hadn't heard many Republicans talk like this in a long time, and I just found this one guy who seemed like he's talking about this. So I jumped in and kind of worked with some other people to get active. We figured out that, you know, I was always a Republican, you know, always have been, and to say, well, the best avenue of projecting some of these ideas to jump into the Republican Party and help out. Well, then just recently, in the last, you know, few months, I hear about this alt-right movement. It's like, well, if there's anybody alt-right, it's probably the people I'm hanging around with. And we're all looking at each other going, what the heck is an alt-right movement? We've never heard of this stuff before. And now all of a sudden, the media, they push it out like, wow, this is, if you're a Republican, chances are you're alt-right. And part of alt-right is being this white nationalism. What does that mean? That's not what I'm about. You know,
when you say the media is saying that Republicans are racist, specifically who?
If you look at CNN,
no, specifically
MSNBC,
who? Because CNN is 24 hours of a dozen different shows.
I don't know. You There's can one. Go
Google, Rachel Maddow. I mean,
Google Trump racism videos, and you'll find a bunch of sources right there of newscasters with interviewing people on the street that are asking, you're a black man. Who are you going to vote for? Why are you going to vote for Trump? And then all of a sudden they sound cogent as to why they're going to vote for Trump. Well, you don't meet my needs. They shut off the camera and move on.
I didn't see that.
You're more of a commentary than a reporter speaking, looking at, I've got an angle for a story, here's the microphone, please answer this question. And if that question doesn't get answered correctly, they put the microphone down and they go to the next person. They have an angle of the story they want to put on the news today.
I think the Republicans are victims of the Stockholm Syndrome. Donald Trump came in, he took over the party, and Republicans said, well, he's not Hillary Clinton, so let's vote for him. And just like somebody that's been kidnapped, like Patty Hearst, fell in love with her captors, the Republicans are falling in love with theirs.
Okay, so let me kind of redirect this conversation, though. Is it Richard Spencer and his overt allegiance to Trump and his movement of racism within what he's trying to define himself within the Republican Party, and that makes me very uncomfortable.
Robert Byrd, Senator Byrd, was a higher up in the KKK. He was a Democrat and supported Hillary Clinton, so I guess that makes Hillary Clinton a racist.
So that makes it right, because the Democrats have racism in their parties.
All
it's okay
doing,
to happen.
All you're doing is equating what some wacko guy said, and then he says, I support Trump, and now I can't make that same realization with Hillary Clinton?
No, the reality is, though, that doesn't make it right. In other words, the Democrats that supported Robert Byrd, is that any different than Republicans supporting racist comments on their side? And I don't
let
think
me,
that makes
let
it
me
right.
Let me just say this. You're going to have bad actors on both sides.
Agreed.
That's human nature. There's going to be some people that are good and some people that aren't so good, and some of them are going to be affiliated with Democrats and some with Republicans. The problem right now is this whole push towards Donald Trump as a racist. I don't think Donald Trump is a racist. I don't think he'd say anything that would indicate that he's a racist. But it continues to be pushed out there by protesters, sometimes by the mainstream media, yes, with people that they have on, and I can't give you names, but they certainly have people that come on their TV station or their news program, and they ask them questions, and they bait them, and they get exactly what they want. So, no, I won't give you an exact name, but it does happen. We've all seen it.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying to do the broad brush is inappropriate. Just as it's inappropriate to say that anybody that voted for Donald Trump is a racist. It's the same
exactly.
type of
so we agree then. There's yeah. bad actors on both sides. Yeah. The only problem that I have right now is that there's an awful lot of this racist talk in America, and it kind of seems like a backlash for Donald Trump winning the presidency and a lot of people that are hurt by it.
I will also grant you that because of the 24-hour news cycle we live in and the world of instant media with Facebook and Twitter and that, if there's a racist event that happens in North Carolina, one that happens in Arizona, and one that happens in Dubuque, you know, it's all coming into our homes, and it looks like it's happening everywhere. And the reality is, you're right. We all get along a lot more than, I will say, the media and politicians want us to believe. Okay, the politicians cause this divide. And the reality is that I have friends that are extremely liberal and extremely conservative that I like and respect in both cases. I don't agree with them on a lot of things, but that doesn't get reported. And you're right about this, in that, you know, if it bleeds, it leads sort of a mentality. We want the conflict. But is that the media's fault or the consumers of the media's fault who take it? Because when Barack Obama was looking to go into Syria and bomb Syria, the media had three times as many stories as Miley Cyrus twerking. It happened about the same time. All right? But if you took a look at the clicks on the internet, there were twice as many clicks on Miley Cyrus twerking, and people were talking about Miley Cyrus twerking much more so than going in and bombing Syria. This past weekend, we saw the same thing with the Hamilton scenario. All right? If we're talking about, and Donald Trump may be a genius in this regard, because if we're talking about what an actor said from a stage about, you know, Mr. Pence, well, that was very respectful, saying, sir, we don't necessarily feel like you're going to be representing us. Don't forget about us, too, which I think is a valid concern. Whether it's real or not, perception is reality. And the very much so, and then Donald Trump talks about that. All of America was talking about that. Well, we weren't talking about his business dealings. We weren't talking about other issues that had gone down that same weekend. You know, his attorney general not being approved the judgeship because of racist comments he made 30 years ago, rightly or wrongly. I mean, it is the reality. These are legitimate news stories. We weren't talking about those. We were talking about a Broadway actor and a vice president.
Well, but the reality is... That doesn't sell. That's not interesting. Sensationalism sells. I think that's a problem that we have here in America. It's a problem with the low information voter, or the people that don't go vote at all because they say, I can't tell you how many people I talk to that say, I don't pay attention to the news. I find it depressing. And it's basically easier for me just to get through life with my head in the sand, and listen to music. In all honesty, we're talking about, you know, the vast majority of people as though they are paying attention to where, unfortunately, in our nation right now, it's a low percentage of people that are actually paying attention, and they don't want to hear about business dealings, and they don't necessarily want details on the economy. They do. They're more interested in hearing about Miley Cyrus quirking or twerking or whatever she does.
Not the media's fault. You and I agree.
So Tom,
the media controls that. The media does control that information. And so I think if they weren't all over and that's what they're talking about and making it their lead story and bringing it up, by the way, you know, every 20 minutes replaying it, I do think that the media controls that.
So, Tom, I would say then that if twice as many people are clicking on a link to see twerking versus learning about Syria, that you must be for Electoral College.
I am for the Electoral College. I would like
Well, there you go.
College. No, I would like to see a change in the way that Nebraska does it. Nebraska and Maine, I think that would be better so that Republicans get votes in California and Democrats get votes. Okay, we're good. You see, we're agreeing here. We're not so far apart.
Okay, so we're kind of coming to the end of our panel discussion today, and we're kind of focused on the media as one of the problems that we face. But the question I want to ask is, what are the issues that you think our nation does face, the critical issues, and do you have hope for the future? What is the hope for the future? What are the concerns that you may have? What are the items on the agenda that you would like to see discussed in the next 100 days or so?
Well, part of the reason why I jumped into politics was to look at the international, what we're doing around the world, and I'd like to see, I was very refreshed by the fact that for the longest time, we were told by the Democrats that you've got to go talk to your enemies. And then when
Obama's in charge, and he, you know, he can't talk to Putin, can't talk to Russia. And it was very refreshing to hear Donald Trump saying, hey, you know, I don't know this guy, but certainly there's something out there we can work together on. And I think that's a deal maker right there. That's a builder. That's somebody who says, hey, let's look at the world, maybe not as the U.S. dominance, but what can the U.S. do to help other countries help themselves and grow and do that, you know, help them to help themselves so that they can be stronger, and maybe we don't have to be the country that goes around the world fighting all these wars. And I think that as long as we understand that we start with the base of individual freedom and liberty, that the government isn't the top down, doesn't tell you how to live your life, that if we can instill that, start locally, spread that to the state, go nationally, and spread it to the world, that maybe we'll be a much better place in this world. And I think Donald Trump is more of the guy that says, look, I'm not here to run the country. That's what you guys do. And people down at local level should be doing this. He's worked with local developers and local politicians to get things done. I think he's looking at from a much micro level than, hey, you guys go take care of this. We'll take care of the macro, looking at the rest of the world, making sure that we got peace everywhere, things like that, and working with even our enemies and finding out what demands they have and making this a better place to live, because he's got grandkids now too. So I think he's going to blow people away with what he is capable of doing for this country and for this world.
Well, and I would agree with that, but I also think it's even bigger than that. It's about limited government, and it's about giving people back, giving states back the control, because that's what our country was founded upon, and that's what I think we're going to see from Donald Trump. And I also think he's gonna allow the states to take more control when it comes to education. That's what we need, and that's where we can control it. It's at our local level. Where I am, the little people in government. But you know what? When you give the control back to the people, it's amazing what you can accomplish. And I think that's where we've been for the last 8 years. It's the government controlling everything, the government dictating the health insurance you're going to have, and the government telling you what doctor really you're going to go to, because you didn't get to keep your doctor under the Obama plan. So I think that there's a lot of hope. That's how I felt after the election. We are going to keep America the great country that it actually is. I don't necessarily know that we need to make it great again, because I've always believed that we are great. But we now have a leader that's going to focus on those issues of keeping us safe. That's what we rely on our federal government to do. Identifying actually who our enemies are, and that's the difficult part here. We don't just have one leader in one country that is our enemy. We have groups and factions that are infiltrating our cities. And so what we need to do is make sure that through our immigration that we are checking the backgrounds, and that we aren't letting the enemy into our country. And I think that's first and foremost one of the most important things Donald Trump's going to do for our country.
You know, I think the Obama administration weakened America. I think 8 years of his leadership hurt us, for not just for the immediate term, but for the long term. I believe that Barack Obama is on the philosophically to the left of the Democratic Party, as we know it. I tell my Democratic friends that I don't think John F. Kennedy would have had any use for a lot of Barack Obama's policies, particularly when you look at Obamacare and entitlements. I think that he believed in the European socialism model. That doesn't make him an evil or a bad man. That's just where I believe he is, and that's where he wanted to take America. I also think that he didn't want to get very involved in international policy because he didn't want to offend anybody. And he created some vacuums there, and those vacuums got filled in a very negative way. So what I want to see is us go back the other direction. America, I still believe, is a center-right country, and I believe that Donald Trump is a center-right leader. At the end of the day, that's where I think he'll end up. So if he can kind of pull us back in that direction and right the ship, I'll be pretty pleased.
Okay, I want to say thank you for participating. And now if we have some Q&A time here, if anybody has any questions, we're ready to field those.
As we watch President-elect Trump's appointment process. He's interviewing lots of people, and he's made a number of appointments, and they're interesting in the sense that, for example, Governor Nikki Haley, he's going to put forward to represent the United States in the UN. She was a very big critic of Donald Trump. Now he has, the report is that he is going to put someone forward for Secretary of Education from Michigan, who is sort of an establishment Republican. So the question that I have about this is whether you see Donald Trump as sort of gathering people in, that is, broadening his reach and gathering people in from outside this sort of core. And I'm asking this now of the Republicans on the panel, since we're talking about the GOP in transition.
Well, I absolutely think that President Trump has done an excellent job. I mean, I think he's even surprised a number of the media who've said that they are surprised with him calling up Nikki Haley. Mitt Romney, meeting with Mitt Romney. I think the next best thing that he could probably do is ask Ben Sasse to help him with Obamacare, because there isn't anybody that knows the problems with Obamacare better than Senator Sasse. And I think he is making those appropriate and very instrumental selections and bringing those people in. And I think that is why I think our two-party system has shown that it is working. And I think what Donald Trump has shown is that there is a bigger umbrella under under our party for libertarians, for people of both genders, for all races. And I think that's what Mr. Trump has done. It's not necessarily being reported, but you can see him doing that. And I also think that Mr. Trump is probably a lot smarter than he's able to articulate at times, is how I see it. I think sometimes when he's speaking or tweeting, it doesn't necessarily come across. But when you look at the successes that he has and you hear him speak, I was absolutely amazed at the convention, and I was there with many of you in this room. When Donald Trump spoke, I found that his policies and what he was saying were very clear. But I do believe that Donald Trump is making the right decisions, and he is making them intelligently. And I think we're going to see some great things by him bringing in people that were some of his biggest critics.
Amy, I agree with you, and that's encouraging for me. I know I've criticized Donald Trump a lot here, but I also think that is encouraging that he is dealing with these other people. But I asked the panel here, how do you think that that's going to play with the people that were yelling, "Drain the swamp"? Okay, you weren't one of the Drain the Swamp people. I wasn't one of the Drain the Swamp people, but there are an awful lot of them that were. And when they see Rance Priebus, when they see Mitt Romney, when they see Nikki Haley, when they see this, how is that going to play with them?
Well, remember, he is the CEO, so it's his decision. He can tell these people, yes, I realize you're in a position that I put you in, but now you're going to do it my way. And if you don't like it, hit the highway, because that's what he does. If you're going down the road and he doesn't like it,
this is not a Fortune 500 company.
No, but you saw during the campaign, he had, what, three different campaign managers. If he sees something not going the way he wants it, he's going to fire that person, put the right people in to get the job done. And I think that's very refreshing, that maybe we'll actually see not career politicians who will stay in these positions. And really, go back and look at all these cabinet people that any past president has had. Has anybody actually stayed on for the entire 4, even 8 years, the entire time?
But you're actually
it always changes.
You're actually changing the question, though, because the people were yelling, "Drain the swamp." They weren't saying, "Put in some establishment people and let's see how they do."
Well, take it back. Now, you do need, this is government, like you said. This isn't running. Isn't really a business. This is government. So you got to have some government people who are in charge that do know how the system works, policy works, that sort of thing. So
play to those people, though? How does it play to that base that was out there? How long does it take before they become disillusioned?
I think what you're seeing, though, is some of the people he's putting in charge are actually people that people like. I think Governor Haley's very popular down in South Carolina. I think there's other people that he is looking at that is saying, yeah, these are popular Republican. Ben, who's the past candidate.
Ben Carson.
Yeah, Ben Carson. Possible HUD secretary. I mean, this is a guy who said, no, I'm not going to do this. And now he's
being back in the mold, saying, hey, maybe we can do this now. And I think that's where it's not going to be 100% drain the swamp type of people coming in, complete outsiders. You can't always do that. But I think that the direction that Donald Trump is still pushing down the road, and much of the diversity that Amy's talking about that's going to be appointed, that is going to happen. And that's going to blow people away if we know.
John, God love you. You're talking like a Republican operative and not answering the question. Okay? Because, yeah, look, I agree with what you're saying. I agree with everything you're saying, but I wasn't one of those people yelling, drain the swamp and lock her up. He's not going to lock her up. He's not going to drain the swamp, and he's not going to build the wall. How long does it take till they turn on this Republican Party?
Well, it would be his law enforcement that could go after her, or it could be Congress that could go after her also, that without the Attorney General's help. So even though he may not go after her, maybe somebody else in the Republican Party or in Congress will do that. So the jury's still out on whether or not she will go to jail or at least be, you know, held accountable for these kind of crimes.
But again, I come back to, I just think those voices are louder. I don't think that necessarily the numbers are there. So, Tom, when you're talking about what about these people, you make it sound like that's, you know, over half our party or more that are crying out for that. And I really don't. I think that that's a small minority, in all honesty, in our party that are calling for the drain the swamp and put Hillary behind bars.
They were the ones that showed up at the rallies, and they were the ones that were motivated to get out and vote. And they were the ones that showed up, and they were the ones that came there and turned some of those blue states red.
I think that those voices were heard more, and they were reported on more, again, in the media. When it comes to the actual numbers, I think the majority of the Republicans, if they see results, if Donald Trump produces results, they're not going to care whether it's an experienced politician like Newt Gingrich who helped him get there or not. I think that's how he's going to be
and
judged.
Let's keep in mind, I mean, he you said this earlier, he's not just a Republican president, he's a president of the United States. And he has to try and bring America together after a very tumultuous campaign. And I think, to Bob's point, Bob Edmund, who asked the question, I think Trump is trying to do that by kind of opening his arms to people like Nikki Haley, Mitt Romney. I remember that battle royale that went on between those two. I mean, I think it shows true leadership when you can get past some of the things that were said about him. I think it shows true leadership, and he's taking a more conciliatory tone. And as he does that, he's going to pull in more people in the middle. And if he makes progress, he might even pull more people from the left. And at the end of the day, regardless of if we're Republicans or Democrats, we all want what's best for this country.
Well, we want to wind up our discussion today. We thank you for listening. It's important to continue to have productive and constructive dialogues, not only with people that agree with you, but with people you have disagreement. With that, we conclude our forum today.
You've been listening to a program from Bellevue University on Noon Forum. This coming Friday, January 20th, the country will celebrate the inauguration of Donald J. Trump as our 45th president. In light of the surprising November election, we have heard a panel discussion on the topic, the GOP, a party in transition. The members of the panel were John Tucker, the chairman of the Douglas County Republican Party, Dan Welch, former Omaha City Councilman and chairman of the Nebraska Republican Party, Amy Melton, Omaha City Councilwoman, and Tom Becca, opinion editor for KPTM Channel 42. The moderator was Rick Galusha, associate professor in the College of Arts and Sciences at Bellevue University. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, November 23, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Rick Galusha for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.